When I was in college, I spent a summer serving in several inner-city churches in another state. After a few weeks, it dawned on me that I never saw the pastor's wife at one of the churches. I asked if she was okay and was told, "Oh, she doesn't come. She doesn't want her husband to be a pastor. She attends maybe once every 3 or 4 months." You could drive by their house on any day of the week and find her car in front of the house where she was with her small children. I'm not criticizing this woman. I didn't know this couple or the backstory of their marriage or ministry. All I know is they left ministry shortly after. Over the course of a lifetime, I've had the opportunity to meet hundreds of diverse ministry couples, each as unique and individual as the men and women themselves. Some of these couples struggled their entire ministry to be in sync with each other, while others eventually figured out a rhythm that allowed each to flourish and thrive. Many variables have to be factored in when you try to nail down the traits or habits that might predict which couples will last in ministry. But I've noticed one common trait in couples who thrive over the long haul: the ability to see themselves as a team who shares a God-given dream. I believe this one factor can actually make or break the ministry God has called you to. Being a team sharing a dream can revitalize a marriage, a family, a local church, and ultimately the kingdom of God. When Rick was in seminary at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas, he surprised me one day with a request. "Honey, this summer I'd like for you to go with me to a church growth conference in Southern California. I'm interested in planting a church." My response was less than enthusiastic or supportive. Thanks, but no thanks. Why in the world would I ever want to attend a church growth conference? And what's this about planting a church? I thought you were going to be a pastor of an established church. I objected to his idea on every level. I wasn't interested in church planting. We didn't have the money to make the trip or pay the conference fees. I couldn't take the time off work. And it made me anxious to think about planting a church. The part about no money, no building, no members, no security or stability bothered me. He outsmarted me at every turn. He said, "We'll do it cheap and fast. We'll drive straight through so we don't have motel bills. I'll request scholarships for us. We'll stay with your parents so you can see your family. And we can go to the beach." Since we were dirt poor and could barely afford to make long-distance calls, he wore down my resistance by dangling in front of me the chance to see my parents and younger brother. The chance to visit my beloved Southern California coast was the final incentive. Still, I pretty much went kicking and screaming to the church growth conference. We read Karen Burton Main's book, Open Heart, Open Home, aloud to each other to pass the time. But I also remember the tension between us during that 1,388-mile drive. Have you ever had one of those experiences when your life is positively changed forever? When your well-laid plans suddenly explode into a vapor and the future opens up before you in such wonder that it takes your breath away? That's what happened to me at the Church Growth Conference. In each session, I listened to speakers challenging us to keep the uninterested, unchurched community in mind as we contemplated ways to catch their attention long enough to let them know God loved them. Their words began to peel the layers of opposition away from my frightened, resistant heart. Bit by bit, a word at a time, the dream that had sprouted in Rick's heart began to take root in mine as I caught the vision of reaching unchurched people for Jesus Christ. My fond imaginings of security and stability evaporated with barely a backward glance.